This is Hometown Heroes. Honoring the men and women whose service and sacrifice have secured our freedom. Now, the host of Hometown Heroes, Paul Leffler.
Welcome to another edition of Hometown Heroes, the show where each time we take a trip back in time and listen to stories from members of our greatest generation. Today, we're going to visit with a 92-year-old paratrooper from Lemoore, California, Julian Mazuca, 92 years old, like I said, not originally from California. He grew up in Texas. Uvalde, Texas? Where in the world is that?
Between Del Rio and San Antonio. 80 miles from south of San Antonio, and that's where Uvalde is.
And you grew up in a big Mexican-American family?
Yes. Two brothers and four sisters.
And where were you in that group of seven?
I got a sister older than me. Uh-huh. I'm the second one in the family.
So you're the oldest boy and the second of all of them. What was it like growing up there in Texas? What kinds of things did you do as a kid?
My father used to work on a ranch in different places, but he was a professional chip chair. And when we grew up, that's where we learned how to do chairing, and I do that for 45 years in this town here. Mm-hmm. I was in charge of the crew. I had a crew working for me for 45 years.
We'll take a brief aside down that path then. What's the key to being good at shearing sheep? Do you pick up a touch for shearing sheep so you don't spook them? Or what's the secret to doing it right?
I grew up in that environment, so I learned that kind of business. For me, it was easy because that's what I do almost. And that's what when I get out of the service, I start a crew on my own. And I stayed here for 45 years, and I quit in 1991.
What's the worst thing that ever happened to you while shearing sheep? I'm sure not every single sheep was cooperative.
Well, I was a relative chief chair for not very long. I used to, in charge of the crew, all of the employers, they were my employers. Uh-huh. I started that business myself. I buy the equipment and everything, and I do the contracting.
So you laugh at them when the sheep runs away from them.
Yeah. All of those contracts and pay the guys and tell them what to do.
A pretty big territory that you covered, shearing sheep?
Bear Valley, all the way up to Oregon.
Wow.
Sheep, almost 250,000 in 3.5 months.
That's a lot of sheep. That's a lot of wool. And that was an important enough job that actually got you some deferments. We'll talk about that. But I like to ask every veteran what he remembers about December 7th, 1941. Do you remember how you found out that the Japanese had bombed Pearl Harbor?
I remember that very well. I was in Arizona working in the ranch or someplace, and I remember well.
What did it mean to you as a young man? You were just 20 years old at the time.
I don't know what to say. Well, I mean, that, you know, it's not very good.
Did it occur to you at all that what was starting to happen might involve you at some point, that you might have to do something?
Yeah, I know that. And that's when I registered for the service, and I had a different name. I don't know. My name was Julian Mazuca. They used to call me Pedro. And when I went to register for the service, they had to take my birth certificate. And there was Julian. And I said, my mother, how come they call me Pedro and my real name is Julian? I said, your grandma changed your name because you look like your grandfather.
So they've been lying to you all those years?
For a long, long time. And from then on, I know that I had to use my right name, Julian, and that's what I used my right name.
So all your buddies in the war certainly called you by that name. But you didn't go right away. How many deferments did you get and why?
Three. Yeah. Three deferments because I was chip churning and I got a chance to 6 months in each deferment. And after three deferments, there's no more. They called me to go for my physical. And the next day, I mean the same day, they called me and I wasn't there at 11 o'clock. They gave me the papers. Put me in a train to San Pedro, to Los Angeles, and they pick me up in Los Angeles, take me to San Pedro, and they put uniform on me.
Going to San Pedro is almost enough to make you want to change your name back to Pedro.
Yeah, almost. Yeah.
I know it was a long time ago, but what do you think your expectations were about going in the Army? Because by this time, February of 1944, there's a lot that's been happening. You've probably heard about some of this war overseas.
Well, I was not afraid to. I was willing to go and do my business, my service. I had a lot of offers to go to Mexico, forget about going to service. I said, no, I stay here. If the rest of the guys go, I go. And that's where I went. And you know, to be a paratrooper, that's a big commandment. You had to raise your right hand and you said, they asked if you're willing to jump any place, any time to defend your country. And I said, yes, I do. And that's what they put the wings on after you qualify, make 5 jumps.
Before we get to any of your jumps, I want to find out how you ended up being a paratrooper, because most guys don't get drafted and get stuck in that. You probably had to volunteer somewhere. Had you ever been in an airplane before?
No, never been in an airplane. And that's the guy, we was in a basic training in Little Rock, Arkansas. A couple of weeks before we finished the training, they takes to the theater and show how they want to volunteer for paratroopers. And the guy that was my friend, who was staying in the same barracks, his name is Tony Maris. He said, let's go and be signed for paratroopers. I said, no, I don't say, yeah, we got the guns too.
That must have been a good movie.
So we signed up, and about a week later, they called us for another physical. And he didn't pass the physical, and I do.
So he pulled a fast one on you. He's the one who got you to volunteer, and he didn't have to do it, huh? Did you stay in touch with him at all? Do you know what he ended up doing?
Well, he's in L.A., but I don't know. His name is Tony Maris. And one time I went to the parade, to the Rose Parade, and I meet him. I seen him in the street, went by. By the time I parked my car, he disappeared.
They showed you guys a movie about what paratroopers do.
With 751 paratroopers went for training. Out of the 751, the only guy, 111, got the win. The rest of the old, they didn't make it.
So you trained with 750 other guys, but only 111 of you made it?
That's right.
How tough was it? What weeded so many guys out?
Well, it's kind of tough. And they raise you up in those towers 250 feet up in the air. And you had to do all the instruction. They get do this and do that. And then I said, click, and here come 35 feet, like it's going to hit the floor. And boy, that take the cake. That's the toughest. Jumping in an iron place is nothing to it. But those towers, they're something else.
Yeah, I hope you weren't afraid of heights.
After you go 2-3 times, it's nothing to it. I mean, when you get down, the lieutenant would say, ask you what's your name. I mean, what's your name? And you have to give your name, the social security, and all that. And I can't even talk. He hits you in the back. And he said, you have to control your nerves, Julian. He said, you have to know how to control your nerves. And that's true.
I guess you developed that over time. What did your family say when you told them you were a paratrooper?
This is up to me. This is up to me, but they don't want me to be in the service the first time. They want me to go to Mexico, and they're going to help me put some kind of a business and stay there. I said, no.
They were doing that because they didn't want you to die. I mean, that's what it was, right?
Yeah, that's right. Trying to save my life, but I'm glad I do what I think was right.
Well, I think all our listeners would agree, and I think it took some courage, clearly, to make that decision, too. You mentioned those jump towers, and they're actually still there at Fort Benning, where our paratroopers train today. They were originally made as part of a thrill ride for the 1939 World's Fair in New York City, 255 feet and 6 inches high. I've got photos of them on the Hometown Heroes Facebook page. They have 4 horizontal arms, like a big X or a plus sign at the top of that tower, and they take you out to the end of that arm on a cable and then let you go, right?
And you have to give all the instructions. Mm-hmm. Turn left, turn right, and do this, and then the same click, and here come 25, 30 feet down, and then they open up.
But what about that first time you went up in a plane and jumped out of a plane? What did that feel like?
I didn't feel like, I mean, that was easy. After you got out of the jump and the whole thing opened because you got a steady climb, you throw the steady line and here we go. After you left the 90-some feet out of the airplane, the part that chute opens.
So you got the hang of it pretty quickly.
Oh, yeah. And the first 2 jumps are kind of ski. After that, there's nothing to it.
So you make 5 practice jumps.
Yeah,
and you earn your wings. What did that feel like when they pinned those on you?
There's something. Very happy to be get your wings. You can, like I said, there were 750 some guys, and we only had 11 qualify for that. That's in Fort Benning, Georgia.
So you got done with that, and the war's going on. What unit did they assign you with?
The 17th Airborne Division.
How did the other guys treat you? What was it like being around all those other paratroopers?
They all very nice. They all help each other like they should. Yeah, even when you jump, they had to check you back if the paratrooper's right and all of that.
Did you feel like you built a trust with other guys, that you could depend on them if you were deployed somewhere?
Yeah, I think so. Help each other. We sleep. Sometimes you got your friend sleeping in the same hole. In the same we had to dig a hole when you're in the front line. And he watched you for a couple of hours, and they rest, and then you watch him for another couple of hours in there. We help each other.
You know, I've interviewed a lot of Mexican Americans who served in the war, and including a paratrooper in El Paso. And he was one who felt like there was some kind of prejudice that he encountered, that he was treated differently because he was Hispanic. Others have said, no, that I got treated just like anybody else. What was your experience?
They treated me very nice, no problem. And I was a barber. When we got overseas, the captain asked if anybody knew how to cut hair. And some of the guys, name is Lucas, he said, Julian Mazuka. And the captain said, who's Julian that was right in front of him? I said, yeah. I said, I had no tools, sir. He said, don't worry, we get you some. Uh-huh. And he said, for now, you're going to be a company barber. And that's what I was doing, cut the hair of those guys.
What would you rather do, shear sheep or cut hair?
Well, cut hair by easy.
The other guys in your unit were all Caucasian or what?
There's only two Mexicans in there. Uh-huh. One is from Denver, Colorado. His name is Tony Garcia, and myself. And my company, and quite a few in different companies.
So how much hair did you cut? I mean, how many haircuts you think you gave in the service?
I used to do 15, 18 a day, and then I quit. And I didn't supposed to charge. I said, no, that's whatever they want to give me. It's okay with me. I wasn't supposed to charge. That's supposed to do was my duty. Yeah. And some of the guys had a lot of money, threw 100, 200 francs. And at the end of the day, I had 15, 1600 francs.
All satisfied customers, I'm sure, right?
Yeah. We had no choice.
But who cut your hair?
This other guy, Garcia, Tony Garcia. He was my helper. He liked to do that too.
What was your incentive for joining the paratroopers? What made it worthwhile for you?
We got $50 more, I mean $100. In those days, it was $50 a month, and we used to get $100 a month. And what I like it, we don't have to put no KP, and we had it fast every day. As soon as 5 o'clock, we signed, we out, and we go and get back, we in, and that's it.
That made you jump a lot, right? You had to jump so often to keep the pay up, is that right?
Yeah.
Well, as you're going through all these trainings, and you're jumping out of airplanes, practicing all this, I'm sure you know that you're going to have to do it for real at some point. Were you starting to get anxious about when you would head overseas and what it would be like?
No, I wasn't anxious. I just do what you have to do. They tell me what to do.
Well, and in 1945, they would tell you had to head overseas. And on March 24th of that year, you were part of the largest single-day, single-location airborne operation ever. We'll find out about Mr. Mazuka's role in Operation Varsity when we come back. Next month, Mr. Mazuka will be headed to Washington, D.C. with Central Valley Honor Flight. Thanks to so many of you who are stepping up with your support, and to businesses like the one I'm going to tell you about in a minute. Hometown Heroes will continue after this. Our World War II veterans deserve a chance to see their memorial in Washington, D.C., and you can help send them there simply by renting a car. Between now and the end of October, visit any Enterprise Rent-A-Car location from Bakersfield in the south to Tulare, Visalia, Hanford, Selma, Fresno, Madera, Merced, all the way north to Sacramento. Tell them you heard this ad on Hometown Heroes, and Enterprise will donate 10% of your rental to Central Valley Honor Flight. Restrictions may apply. I'm sure you're familiar with Enterprise, but do you know why the largest car rental company in the U.S. is called Enterprise. The company's founder, Jack Taylor, was a decorated F-6F Hellcat pilot in World War II, flying off the deck of the Big E, the aircraft carrier USS Enterprise. Maybe I should get him on the show sometime and he can tell us how he earned the Distinguished Flying Cross. In the meantime, choose Enterprise for your next rental. Tell him you heard this advertisement on Hometown Heroes, and you'll be helping to send our World War II veterans on one more tour with honor. They say a picture is worth a thousand words, but when it comes to making my mouth water, I don't need a thousand words, just two of them. Mongolian beef. Okay, two more. Ming's restaurant. And I guess if you want to know where to find it, I should give you two more. Las Banas. That's where I grew up, and I'm guessing Las Banas is somewhere you pass through every now and then. And if you drop in for the Mongolian beef, you might start calling it what I have for years. My favorite place to eat. Period. He may not look old enough for this to be true, but the owner, Paul Cito, has been working his magic in the kitchen there for 45 years now. It's all delicious. If you're a garlic fan, try the Baja shrimp and thank me later. But the Mongolian beef is absolutely unmatched. The flavor, incredible. The texture, tremendous. I can't do it justice with words. You just gotta go taste it. One word of caution, do not go on Monday because Ming's is closed on Mondays. So pick another day, tell them I sent you, and let me know if your taste buds enjoy it as much as mine do. That's Ming's Restaurant, 435 West Pacheco Boulevard in lovely Las Banas, California.